Woodbridge. Our speaker for this evening is Debbie H., who will be sharing her strength, hope, and experience.
Thank you. Debbie H., a grateful recovering compulsive overeater. I'm grateful to be here tonight, and I'm grateful each one of you are here to help me stay abstinent today. I just want to say I'm sorry for being late. Okay. Just to start off with where I came from. I'm originally from Indiana, and my food was starch, with starch on top of starch. And I came here in 76. I moved to New Jersey in 76, but I'm originally from Indiana. And I went to my first OA meeting in Indiana. It was about either 1970 or 69, I'm not sure which, but I remember the dress I had on. It was a muumuu, and I wore that dress when I was pregnant or not pregnant. And it was in the summertime. It was in the library, and it was a large speaker meeting. I went because my sister-in-law had asked me to go with her, and it was hot and lots of people, and I really couldn't hear the lady. So, but that was my first OA meeting. And I grew up in Indiana, and I was a pudgy kid. I remember pictures, looking back at pictures of me. I had, it looked like you could put your finger in my skin, it wouldn't come back out, like a little dough boy or dough girl. And I was the first grandchild, so we lived with my grandmother and my aunt, and both my two aunts and my mother. And I was the baby, and they used to dress me up and take me out. My mother was 16 when she had me, and so her sisters were younger. And I probably got anything I wanted. and I'm sure food was in there because of the way I looked. I was a little chunk. And anyway, my mother's sister was my eating buddy, she was about 12 years older than I was, and she stayed with us a lot over the years, and I just loved her to death. My grandmother worked, and it was her home, and I was the first grandchild, and she just adored me, you know. And one of the big things of my life was to find out, when I guess I was probably in junior high school, that not everybody loved me, because I thought everyone loved me the way my grandmother loved me, you know. And it was really upsetting, and it hurt me to find out that my life was going to be a little bit more difficult than what I thought it would be. I remember, you know, eating candy. I loved it. I think my mother tried to control. I also had a brother and a sister. My mother tried to control our eating because she didn't buy a lot of sweets, you know, cookies or anything. But we used to steal money and go down to the store, the little filling station down the street, and buy candy. And we went through my dad's change collection, his penny collection, his old coins, and we went all through that. And going down and eating at the candy store. My mother had a charge. Back then they had charges at the little Puckett's food store, and I used to go down there, and she says, well, you can get yourself an ice cream bar. And I said, okay, you know, and I did. And then I started going down on my own until Mr. Puckett called her and told her. And then she didn't say anything to me. I had to get embarrassed of going down and getting a bar, and he's saying, you can't have that. Your mother said, I can't, you know, give you any more on credit. So anyway, but you know, I lied, cheated, and stole for my food addiction. And we were left at home a lot, and I had I made the same, you know, trip. I had the same path from the time I was a kid until the time I came into the rooms, and that was between the couch and the kitchen. And once I learned how to cook for myself, I fixed hamburgers and all kinds of things like that, all kinds of food. And that was it, back and forth. All, you know, during summer vacation, we were at home by ourselves during the daytime, and I just, you know, did that path, you know. And I did like roller skating, and I liked swimming. I would go to the pool and stuff like that, but it was definitely the food was the thing that I loved. And that went on into high school. I was always heavy. I was in high school about 170 pounds, and I remember that. And then the diet pills started, and everybody was taking diet pills. Well, I was lucky. Diet pills made my eyes cross because I had a weak eye, and I had an operation when I was about 5 years old. And so when I took diet pills, they made me nervous, and my eye would cross. So I wasn't able to take those because I didn't want to walk around with a, you know, a crossed eye. So that was lucky on my part. I didn't get addicted to diet pills, because I'm sure I would, because I get addicted to everything. And I remember, just going back a little bit, I remember when I was a little girl, my aunts from Indianapolis, came up to Kokomo and visited us. And they took us to the 57 Flavors. I was a little kid. I remember I was little. I remember I had on a little hat and a little coat, so we must have been to church or something like that. And I was trying to decide which flavor I wanted. They wanted to know. And I thought, you know, I saw a flavor I thought looked good, and I told them what flavor. And that was my comfort food for the rest of my life until I came in here, was that flavor I picked out as a little kid. And so, I mean, who would remember the first time they had their comfort food? But I remember it like it was yesterday. Anyway, so it progressed, you know, as time went on. I started Weight Watchers after I got married. I came to, like, the first OA meeting. All my friends ate a lot, you know. My family ate, like I said, starch on top of starch, not hardly, you know, a vegetable was starch as well sometimes. And I started Weight Watchers in the early 20s, in my early 20s. And I was about 25. I was well over 200 pounds, and you know, had two pregnancies, got married, and I lost about 100 pounds then when I started Weight Watchers. And I did a lot of. I would ride. I, you know, it was the most important thing in my life. I rode my bike to work and rode home. And I made sure I got my exercise, and I ate healthy for the first time in my life. I learned through their food program, it was a lot different than it is today, how to eat healthy. And I loved it, and I kept the weight off for about 5 years. I didn't go to Weight Watchers that whole time. But I really was involved in exercise. That's when I moved to New Jersey during that period. And I worked in Irvington, and the girl I worked with, we used to play tennis at lunchtime, and I used to run, and I was also involved in other things, you know. And so the weight kind of stayed off, although I did not eat properly at that point. I'd given up the Weight Watchers diet, and I would eat one thing, you know, I would eat sweets for dinner, but I wouldn't have anything other than sweets, you know, and that's how I did it. And so that's how it was. You know, I love food, and I told myself the big lie, you know, that I ate because I wanted to. You know, I ate because I enjoyed the flavor, the taste. I liked the taste of food. And but I never knew when to control it. To me, I never bought anything and went home and had some today and then a little bit tomorrow. maybe, you know, it would last for a whole week maybe or something. I was never that way. I brought food home and I ate it. That's it, you know. I could never. I remember having a childhood friend that used to go down to the store and get sweets. And she would, if we went over to her house, she would have a bag in her drawer and pull it out. I'm like, that so impressed me. You know, how could she do that? How could she not eat everything at once? And I wanted to be like that, you know. So anyway, but that's not how I was. And I gained the weight back after about 5 years, and I gained it all back. And went back to, you know, I was greedy. My kids were in junior high school, I would say. Well, still in grade school. But I was greedy. I would buy groceries at the store even before I got home because I didn't want to share anything, you know. I'd go home and sneak. Everything was sneaky, you know, what I could get away with. I would put stuff in my closet, and then after they went to bed, I would get it out. Matter of fact, I remember one time my kids being small, and I left them at home alone, sleeping, so I could go to a fast food place and get my comfort food, you know, and I felt really bad about that. But I, you know, this is what I went for, you know, and this is how it was. A lot of times I would go out late at night throughout my eating career, 2:30 in the morning to get my comfort food. And I didn't think anything, it used to be scary, you know, it was scary. And I was afraid something would happen to me, but I didn't care. You know, I would go ahead and do it. At one point, I didn't have a car, and I'd have to walk, you know, when I lived in Linden. And this is what I did. And so, you know, I started, I came through OA from Friends in another 12-step recovery program that I was in. And they told me about OA. And so I came to my first meeting here in New Jersey with that person. And I remember going to Elizabeth Tuesday night meeting, and there was a gentleman there who said that he hadn't had the cold stuff in 8 years. And I thought, oh man, what I wouldn't give to eat that for 8 years. You know, what I wanted that, you know. But I just didn't, you know, food was such a private, secret thing. I didn't want to talk about it with people. I didn't like the meetings. You know, I didn't want to give up the food. I wanted it, but I didn't want to implement, you know, the tools to use to give it up. And so I made that meeting, and then I made a few other meetings. Then in 93, my daughter, it's a family disease. I have a daughter who has suffers from this disease. And I have a sister and a cousin who have had the bypass surgery. Anyway, she wanted to come to OA. And so she didn't drive. She was in high school, so I had to drive her. And she wanted to come to the Tuesday night Elizabeth meeting. So I went back to that meeting after quite a few years. And I took her, and we went steady to that meeting. That was the only meeting we made from February of 93 to July of 93. And I cried almost every time I was there, every time people shared, because I didn't want to talk about this food. I thought you were a bunch of wimps. She blamed everything on the food. And, you know, I couldn't see it, you know. And then finally, I had started putting on more weight, and I said, well, let me just try it, you know. I'll just try it. I got a sponsor, and it worked for about 9 months. Well, it worked the way I was working it for about 9 months, but it didn't go any further. I only made one meeting a week. I only talked to my sponsor. I only did my 30-day writings. My sponsor wanted me to do my fourth step after the 30-day writings, and I said, no, I already did it in my other program. I'm not doing it again. And, you know, I was an accident waiting to happen. I was looking for a reason to eat in 93, and it happened. My job closed. And so I went right to the food, you know. And that's how it was. I wasn't putting anything into it, and I didn't want to be a compulsive overeater. And I had a huge resentment because I was dually addicted. And so I went out, and I didn't come back for 5 years. And during that time, I gained back most of my weight. But it was just, you know, the reason I was interested in 93 was because of the insanity of the mind disease, the mind games I played about food, and always thinking about food. I couldn't think of anything else but food. I was going out with a guy after the 5 years. Well, I started going out with him in 93. And when I came back in 98, before then, I was like obsessed with food. People would had given us a big box of expensive candies. And I told him, half mine and half yours, you know. Well, I ate my half, and then I started eating his. But I didn't want him to know, because we're sneaks, we're cheats, and we steal. So I would go out and buy little containers of this real expensive chocolate candy and put it back. And it just got too expensive. It got too time-consuming, you know. I just told him, I said, look, I ate it, you know. And he's like, you know, he didn't care. But that's how it is, you know, we're real sneaky. And I lived on the third floor, and he used to walk up and the steps, and I would hear him come up, so I'm jamming stuff in my mouth and trying to eat it before he gets up there. And I always wanted to say, like, I always thought every time he walked through the door, he would want to give me a kiss. I knew it was to smell my breath, you know, to see what I was eating. But I would never say anything, because I thought that was kind of crazy for me to say something like that. But one day I couldn't help it, and I said, you're just kissing me to smell my breath and see what I'm eating. And he goes, what? You know, because it was insane. You know, it was all about me. You know, it was all about the food. I couldn't get the idea of how I was going to eat it, if I was going to get caught, who I could cheat, you know, for food. And I would tell him at that point, like, he would want to come over, and I'd say, well, I'm really tired, you know. And then one day I heard he had a key to my place, and I was there with my cold stuff. I had my towel in my hand so I wouldn't get frostbite, and my spoon. I'm watching TV, and he walks in the door and he sees me like that. I was so embarrassed, you know, because I didn't want people to see me that way. I didn't want them to see how much, you know, food was a big part of my life, how much I loved it. And I wouldn't answer the phone when I was eating, because, you know, I was too busy. So anyway, I was 49 years old. I was smoking. I had a boyfriend that was causing me lots of problems. I just wanted to get rid of him. And my friend told me I should lose weight first. And so that's what I was trying to do. I was going to aerobics. I went back to Weight Watchers. And I gained weight at Weight Watchers. And but I was still doing aerobics. And I was just wondering, you know, what step's going to kill me? You know, here I smoke. I'm 236 pounds. I'm 49 years old. I'm doing aerobics. I'm wondering what step was going to give me that heart attack. And it just dawned on me at aerobics one night, why don't you go back to OA? And so I did, you know. And the first meeting I went to, there was women there from my other program, and they told me to go to the Tuesday night meeting. So they said it was a good beginner's meeting. It was a HOW meeting. And so they really reached out to me, you know, and made me feel comfortable. And so I went to the HAL meeting and a couple of times, and I enjoyed it. A lot of people, a lot of laughing, really structured. And I enjoyed meeting my friends at other meetings too. And so I was sitting at the HAL meeting. This is the second time I've been there, and the person in front of me turns around and she says to me, do you have a sponsor? And I said, no. And she says, well, the lady sitting next to me is going to be your sponsor. And I said, all right, you know. Now, I knew she didn't really have to be my sponsor. You know, I could not call her, you know. But I believe in coincidences, because I am in another 12-step recovery program, and they talk a lot about coincidences. So I thought that God put this sponsor in my life. So I called her. I was doing the Last Supper dance, going up and down 22, trying to find something that was open. But I had stayed at the meeting late, and I couldn't find anything. So I went home, and the next morning I got up, and I called her when she had told me to call her. And she was really good for me. She was had a food plan for me to follow. And she went in my writing. She's very stern about it, what time she wanted me to call. And she went into my writing. And I did that. My writings were all about my boyfriend, though, how terrible he was. And she kept saying, I think you need to focus on yourself. We had the 30-day writings. And whatever the question was, I turned it around so it would deal with my boyfriend. And so she wanted me to start writing about me and the questions instead of my boyfriend. And I did. And I stuck to my food plan. It was sugar, wheat, and flour free. And for that point, it really helped me, you know. It really helped me. I never had been able to go, you know, without a little bit. And, you know, no cheating at all, you know, because I wasn't allowed to eat it. And it really worked for me. And I went through the holidays. She later picked up, I think a little after my 90 days, she took me through the fourth step. And I was willing to go. And another thing, too, that I noticed was that my resentment for being duly addicted had been lifted. And I no longer had this huge resentment. And so I had, felt like I had like kind of a second step. I came to believe that a power greater than me could restore me to sanity, because I no longer had that resentment, and I was willing to make more than one meeting a week. And matter of fact, I had to make three, you know. So anyway, I had lost a lot of weight, you know, shortly into the program, and I just was, you know, wondering, you know, how long is this going to last? You know, I'm just going to lose a lot of weight, and then I'm going to gain it back again. And, you know, it was kind of scary because I knew that wasn't good. And I thought to myself, you know, I have to really just get dumb. Even though I had some 12-step recovery program behind me, I had to get dumb. And I had to throw my all in all into OA. And I started making a lot of meetings. And that was the focus, making a lot of meetings. And I went to a church service, and one of the speakers there said that, you know, she was telling her daughter she had to fall madly in love with God. And I thought to myself, not only do I have to fall madly in love with God, but I also have to fall madly in love with OA. That's what I have to do, just love OA. And that's what happened, you know. I just love this program. I love what it's done for me. I'm still, you know, after a while, I started realizing what a great guy I have, you know. I'm still with that same guy. I've been in here since June 17th, 1998. And I'm still I still have the same boyfriend. And he's a wonderful man. And I have, built up through working the program, you know, going through the steps. I had one sponsor for 7 years, and she took me through the steps a couple of times. And I always wrote on the steps. You know, I wrote on the big book. I always do a writing every morning, and I commit my food to my sponsor. And things just started getting better. You know, I started at work. I found out that boredom was a big reason to eat. So I started at work to focusing on my job completely, you know, not thinking about what I didn't like to do. I would just focus on the next right thing. And so that helps me a lot at home to focus on the next right thing to do. I stopped eating at night. I was a night eater, you know, and I no longer eat at night, you know, after my MA is over with. And a lot of times I've had to get down on my knees and ask God to please relieve me of the urge to eat at night, because I had it, but I wanted to watch the TV program I was watching. But I made a promise to myself, before I eat, I'll go to bed. You know, I'll just go to bed. I don't need to be up. And now I'm lucky I go to bed at a normal hour. When I used to eat, I used to go to bed 1:30, 2:30, you know, at night. And things continue to get better, you know, working at 6th and 7th step. I've had so many miracles in my life. I have a relationship with my kids that are really good right now, and it hasn't always been that way. You know, my son stopped talking to me, you know, for a while. And but it's this program, you know, the character defects of the 6th and 7th step, and turning it over and being relieved of those character defects and being supportive. My daughter said to me, "You really changed when you went into my other 12-step program, but you've really changed since you've been in LA." You know, of course, she doesn't come. But, you know, I have changed, you know, and I'm able to get along with people. People don't push my buttons because I have a higher power, because I know that God is doing this for me, and I can turn anything I want to over to God. Whatever's bothering me, God's going to take care of it. And it's just completely wonderful, you know, to be focused where I am at work, to be focused. I've gone on cruises. I look at that food that they have on cruises, and I think to myself, I've had all of those kinds of flavors so many different ways. There's no way they can put it together that I haven't tasted it, you know, and I don't feel bad. And I make sure that the person knows how I eat, and takes care of me. I know all of you, the war stories of restaurants and surprises and all of those, but, you know, it's being prepared. You know, I learn how to cook my food before I go, to call before I go. You know, just this past summer, I went on retreat, and that wasn't in OA, and I had my food with me, you know, because I heard that the food wasn't right. And I don't feel bad. I think I've gotten so not less stringent in asking for what I need, but I'm able to communicate better on what I need, so that it's not a big deal, you know. And over the years, you learn, you know, you learn how to do it. And I can share food now. I was never, even in recovery with my grandkids, once my food was weighed and measured, I weigh and measure my food stuff. Once it was weighed and measured, I wanted it, you know. But I got to the point where when my grandkids asked me for something, I said, okay, you know, because I know I'm going to eat in 4 hours. And I know that, well, you know, I'm going to eat again. And I used to, early in recovery, a lot of my lies were busted. First of all, everybody gets to eat whatever they want, whenever they want to, except for me. I found that during my first holidays abstinence, that those people, they do watch what they eat. You know, it's not just me, you know. Not too many people get to eat whatever they want to, whenever they want to. And so I was just part of the crowd, you know, refusing the sugar, wheat, and flour at Christmas. I was just part of the other people that were doing that. And I learned to pay attention to what I can eat, so instead of what I cannot eat. So I won't miss out on what I can eat. I've done that before. I was so busy looking at what I couldn't eat that I forgot that I could have something. And just being grateful, you know, that I'm eating. I don't sit in front of the TV thinking, I should have done that. I should do that. I'm doing that today. You know, when it tells you, you should eat this food to be healthy, you shouldn't eat that, you should have this amount. That's what my life is about today. I don't have to wish it any longer. You know, OA fulfilled those wishes. And it's just a joy. I helped my son move to North Carolina this summer. And my grandkids are down there, and I'm not eating over it. You know, I really miss them. I wish they were here. But I know that it's going to be all right, that God's going to take care of me. And, you know, when one door closes, another opens. And I'll have more time now to spend it in the program, you know. And so, but it was, you know, it's, I'm thinking, if I'm ever going to eat, I'm eating over this, you know. But it's not happening. I just keep putting it off, you know, until that next thing happens. I had to put it off till I came here to Woodbridge to speak, and then I'll eat, you know. I just keep putting it off. And I lost my aunt. I told you I had an eating buddy, and she's one of the reasons I came back in 98. She had gotten sugar diabetes, which doesn't run in our family. And I ate the same way she ate, and I knew I was going to get it, and it terrified me. Well, I buried my aunt this past summer. She died of non-alcoholic cirrhosis, which is called fatty liver. And they don't really know what it causes it, but they think it has to do, I saw a special on it, trans fat foods and high cholesterol medications, maybe. They don't know. She donated her body to science. But it's becoming very common, non-alcoholic cirrhosis of the liver. But for the grace of God, you know, I have recovery behind me, you know, and I don't have to go that way. I saw her die. I used to go visit her, and it was a terrible disease. And so it's, you know, I feel very blessed. I feel how I can handle not only the food, but how I handle people, places, and things. And I don't have to feel less than or more than. And this program's given it to me, you know. All the literature, doing the writings, the readings, my sponsor, everybody who shares at meetings, the telephone calls. That's how I found out my boyfriend wasn't a real jerk. I thought he was a jerk, but I found out other people, just like a normal male, you know. through telephone calls and talking to women, you know, whose husbands and boyfriends were the same as mine, and that my kids aren't, you know, abnormal, you know, and they're grown now. But I just love OA, you know, and I love my God of my understanding, and I love being able to share it with you and to listen at meetings and to know that this is where I'm going to learn how to stay abstinent. I know when my last compulsive bite was, but I don't know when my next compulsive bite will be. And I just have to keep coming and keep learning and seeing those people that go out, sometimes they don't make it back. And some of us must die in order that others can live, and I really believe that my aunt was an example for me, and I loved her, you know. And it's really grateful to be here tonight, and that's about it.
Thank you, Debbie. Now it's time for question and answers.
And if you would repeat the question.
Okay.
Debbie, how do you work step 10?
Step 10. I go through my day at night when I'm at home. And but step 10, most of all, I like those. I'm sorry, you asked how did I work step 10. Okay. I like the spot check inventories. You know, that is really what works for me. And like, if I get a feeling, that intuition, that I said the wrong thing or I've done the wrong thing, then to turn around and correct it right away. you know. If I can't, if I'm at home and I really didn't identify it, or if I have an ongoing problem, you know, I turn it over and by working the other steps.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Okay, any other emotions besides boredom that you find triggering?
Do any other emotions besides boredom trigger me? Yes. Not good enough, less than. You know. More than, I mean. Less than, more than feeling will make me hungry. Those are the two main things, boredom and... a lot of times I get, when someone upsets me, I'll think to myself, I'll show you. But then I always think, I'm not eating over that person. Never. You know. So, things like, of that sort.
What's your approach to step 11 on a daily basis?
What is my approach to step 11 on a daily basis? Okay. Well, I have step 11 incorporated in my reading to my sponsor. And, I also read and meditate. Of course, as soon as I get up, I ask God to, you know, thank you, God, for another day. And then I also read and meditate. I take the train, I commute, and I take the train, and I read and meditate on the train. I use a meditation book, and I pray there and do my prayers.
Anybody else? All right. Thank you again, Debbie.
You're welcome.